like this has been done away with. They're still growing tobacco, but it's being grown as a contract basis. Frankly, they're buying most of their tobaccos across the water down in South America or Guatemala or some other place. You asked me what I was saying. Actually, all in the world I'm doing is counting numbers. That's all it is. I'll do it very, very slowly. But bear in mind before I actually do that, that there is a row of tobacco, pile of tobacco after pile, literally thousands of piles of tobacco in a warehouse. And we would go up and down those rows selling one pile at a time at approximately every 4 to 6 seconds. Now, that was a tough job for the auctioneer, but think of the poor guy that was marking on the ticket, what we called a ticket marker. He had to listen to me. He had to figure out what I was saying. He had to listen to the buyer grade that pile of tobacco after I'd sold it to him, and this is all done 4, 5, 6 seconds. But I'm going to start at 40 and go to 45, and I'm going to do it real slow. Or let me put it this way, as slow as I can do it. I 40, 40, the middle of the T, one, the middle of the one, two, the middle of 42, two, the middle of 2, the middle of 3, 43, the middle of 3, 4, the middle of 44, the middle of 45, the middle of American. Well, when we used to sell tobacco like that, we had 10, sometimes as many as 12 buyers in a row. Now this is the toughest part of auctioneering, was being able, if you can visualize, walking down a floor of tobacco at about this pace, glance at the pile of tobacco, I instantly know what it's approximately worth, and I would continue down through there, and I'm covering 12 people on the other side of the row. That's like 12 of you people being there. You have to have a peripheral vision. I could see this lady over here and my wife sitting over here, and there's probably 20 some odd feet between them. But my vision is like that. And if she starts scratching her nose, she just made a bid. And we did this day in and day out, sometimes from 8:30 in the morning till 5 o'clock in the afternoon when I first started back in the, actually in the early mid-50s, I actually started. My first year was in 55. He asked me the question, how did you get started? Well, that's pretty easy. First of all, I don't know how many of you in here are old enough to remember when they used to have on the radio now, and that was before television, they had what they called a hit parade. And they had a tobacco auctioneer. It was sponsored by some tobacco company. I don't remember now particularly who. Philip Morris, I believe. Because that's when they went back years and years ago, and they got on there, call for Philip Morris. Well, half the time people didn't know what they were saying. But Philip Morris was a tobacco company. I grew up on a farm, Central Kentucky, in the hills of Central Kentucky. We didn't have tractors. All we had were horses. We did everything that way. Growing tobacco is a very, very difficult job. It's a very tough job. I had, I guess you'd call it smarts, luck, whatever. I said, there got to be an easier way of making a living than growing it. So I decided I'd like to try to sell it. Then when television came along, and you saw a guy going down the row holding his ear, sold American. This went on and on as a commercial on the hit parade. Snooky Lanson, somebody else, some of the others I can't remember right off the top of my head. But I thought that was the most fascinating thing I'd ever seen in my life. When we would go to the market to sell our tobacco, I was so enthralled with this guy going down the row, couldn't understand a word he was saying. But I learned to watch him, and I saw what was happening, and I decided I want to try to do it. So I went into the military in 1952. And I used to get up in the morning, the first thing they'd say, sell us a pile of tobacco, Whit. In those days, it was bringing about 35 or 40 cents. I 31, 2, 3, 4, 35, 5,000 sold American. And it was just like that. And then when I came out in 54, I said, I'm really fascinated with this. And I got to tell you this little story. It's somewhat interesting, at least it was to me. I got a job when I came out of the military waiting for me at the post office. I come from a relatively large family. I started sticking letters in slots. And I got to thinking, geez, if this is all I got to do the rest of my life, I'm going to be bored out of my mind. That's all there is to it. So, after about 18 months of this, I decided that I wanted to try something else. So I went down at the end of the season to a warehouse in a little town in central Kentucky, and I asked the guy who I knew, I said, is there any way in the world that you'll let me try to sell a couple of piles of tobacco? Yeah, sure. Come on. It was the end of the season. Well, they had six piles of tobacco in a row. This is Burley tobacco up in Kentucky. And it was covered with mud. It had been flooded. It was in a little creek bottom, and it had been flooded, and it was covered with mud. Said I couldn't hurt the farmer, in other words, with a new auctioneer. Put me in the row. He said, now, when you get through selling those six piles, step out and let the other auctioneer take over. So I went down there the best I could. In those days, that little bit of tobacco was selling 10-cent bids. They started at a dime, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 20, 20, 20, 30, 10, 30, 10, 30, 10, 30, 10, 40, 10, 50. That's hard to do, very hard to do. Some way, somehow, I got through those six piles of tobacco, stepped out of the row. The warehouseman reached and pulled me back in. He said, sell the rest of it. And I did, to the best of my ability. Now, there was 12 buyers in the row. Half of those buyers were from that area, and I knew them personally. They came to me, and they said, Whit, damn, we didn't know you could do that. We gonna make a tobacco auctioneer out of you. And they did. And I did that for 40 years. Came to Florida, bought into the warehouses in Florida, bought into a farm, started growing tobacco down here, owned a farm in Hamilton County right up the road here, which I just sold about 6 months ago, and that's how I come in North Florida. Well, my wife and I became so fond of it, because both of us like to play golf, we said, to heck with Kentucky, we're going to move to Florida and stay down there. But we go back up there every once in a while. I know you wanted to ask a question. I'll be glad to. I thought you held your hand.
When you first began to be an auctioneer, did another auctioneer teach you, or did you go to auctioneer school, or did the tobacco company teach you?
That's actually a very good question, and I can answer that by saying that I thought I needed to go to school.
There was.
It was called the Kansas City Auction School. I went to Kansas City, but they never heard a tobacco auction in their life, except on television like I had. And in fact, I had already developed a chant, if you want to call it that. I guess it's natural, I don't know. It's a talent that you're born with or whatever. Anyway, they were teaching you how to sell pots and pans, hold a little public auction, sell real estate or this at auction. And I would get up and like I am right now, and I was chanting. I didn't know it, but it was being broadcast out on the street, and there was a crowd gathered out there to listen to a tobacco auctioneer. And it's a unique chant, but what I like about it was the speed. I mean, it was constant. Boy, you went up and down those rows, and you sweated, and you stopped at the end of the row and you got a drink of water, and then you turned around and you went right back down the next row, and you kept that up all day long. I paid good money. The warehouse paid me. The warehouse, which, as I say, they're just practically gone. If you drive into the Lake City, Florida, there's three tobacco warehouses. There was three up here in Jasper. I think they've been destroyed up there. There's still three in Lake City. They're being rented out and used for something else. But in Lexington, Kentucky, there probably was 30 or 40 warehouses. They're being torn down. Other things are being brought in and put in their place. So, yes. In the Northwest?
Well, over like Quincy, Tallahassee.
Oh. You're talking about North Florida. Okay, I'm thinking nationally. Yes, they used to grow what they call cigar shade-grown tobacco. It was grown under canvas. They do it in Connecticut still. You can fly into Hartford, Connecticut, which I have a daughter up there, and you can fly in there, and people wonder what in the world all these things was. Well, it was tobacco being grown under canvas. And, you know, they hand-pick it, and they cure it by air, and it's used for wrapping cigars. Same thing in Quincy, but they don't do it there anymore. There's still a little bit of tobacco being grown, which is flue-cured, which is used 100%, as far as I know, it's used in making cigarettes. One of the first questions that I've been asking, I've done this type of thing on several occasions, did you ever smoke?
Yeah.
No.
Smoke?
I never smoked.
No,
I never chewed. I did smoke a pipe, and I still love the smell of a pipe. My wife loves the smell of a pipe. But one day I just put it down and said, I'm going to quit, and I quit. Now, I did this similar thing here that I'm doing now many, many years ago at the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C. And they asked me then if I smoked, and I said, no. I don't smoke, and I know it's harmful. I was told that from the time I can remember my mother and father. Don't smoke. It's not good for you. It's harmful. There's no question about that. Anybody with common sense knows it's harmful. But it's a lot of things we do sometimes that is harmful that we shouldn't be doing. There's not a doubt in my mind that cigarette smoking is harmful, especially if it's done to excess. It's like drinking or anything else. Anything you do to excess is going to be harmful. But yes, cigarette smoking is harmful. I'm not up here doing a commercial for smoking, believe me. I was a tobacco auctioneer. It's just like somebody that runs a liquor store. He probably doesn't even drink, but he sells liquor. I sold tobacco. The question was, how did I get hired? Well, to tell you the truth, I could stand here and talk to you for about an hour about how I got hired to begin with, but it's a separate incident in my case. Most of the time, you had to be in the right place at the right time, meet the right person. It's like almost anything else. When you go in for an interview, for a job, it's how you sell yourself. My first job was in Hughesville, Maryland. I got called and asked through a friend, actually a distant relative, who was a government tobacco grader. He said, Whit, can you come to Maryland and close up a market at Hughesville? The regular auctioneer's got to go to Georgia or someplace for a job. Yeah, I drove up there. They were supposed to have maybe an hour sale. I walked out on the floor the next morning, and they had 1,500 piles of tobacco. It took us till 3 o'clock that afternoon. It's the first time I ever got a check for selling tobacco. But while I was there, one of the buyers that was in the row, a guy named Fred Easterly, came up to me and says, would you like to go to Sanford, North Carolina? I'm opening up a warehouse there. I'll give you a job. I took it. From there, I got another job in Washington, North Carolina. I got a job in Horse Cave, Kentucky. I was there for 1 year. Then I went to Harrodsburg, Kentucky for 11 years, and then back to my little hometown, and I was there for 28 years and retired after 40 years. Somebody else had a hand up. You know, that's another good question. What actually happened? No, not really. But one time, I got laryngitis in Greenville, North Carolina, and we went out, and they didn't have anybody to take my place. And I was, honest to God, this is the truth. They make more noise serving communion on Sunday morning than I was making selling tobacco. But everybody was extremely quiet, and they was bidding with their fingers or with their eyes or whatever, you know. And the ticket marker could just barely hear it. He was as close to me as Bill is. And I was every time I'd get ready to sell it, and he could hear me out almost a good whisper is what it was. It's the only time it ever happened, and I was cleared up the next morning. Anybody else have a question? No, I never used. I don't need amplification now. I'm 76 years old.
Okay. A lot of people don't understand that how the auctioneer sounds is extremely important, but it's also knowing the tobacco, what its value is, and knowing who the buyers are, knowing who's likely to buy this tobacco and how much of it they're likely to buy. Mr. Whitaker, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but one auctioneer I talked to said, what you sound like doesn't make a difference as long as you know what you're doing when it comes time to sell tobacco. Would you agree with that?
Bill, yes, that is definitely true. I have heard tobacco auctioneers that were very, very, what I call mediocre as far as sound was concerned. But they knew what they were doing. They knew how to control their sale. They kept it going good, and they did a remarkable job and were excellent. Now, the beautiful chant, which I've heard some that was absolutely incredible, as a little sidelight to that, Bill, one of the guys that they used on these old commercials, his name was F.E. Boone. He was from somewhere in Kentucky. He did one of those commercials. The buyers always laughed about him, about the company using this guy. He says he's got to be the sorriest damn back auctioneer you ever heard in your life. But he had a beautiful, melodious chant, and they used him for the commercial. I don't know. It's knowledge of the product, knowledge of your buyers, knowing who every pile of tobacco. There's certain place on the stalk of a plant of tobacco. Some companies want all down the bottom, some want all up the top, some want from top to bottom. You had to know all of that, and the chant is just a little bit of a plus, I guess you would say, mm-hmm. if you've got a nice melodious chant. Incidentally, somebody might want to know if there's ever been any women auctioneers. There has been one or two. In fact, when I retired from a little town in Cynthiana, Kentucky, when it was my last year, they hired a woman auctioneer to take my place. And she had a beautiful sing-song chant, just beautiful. It's almost like she was singing. But for some reason or other, they said that she didn't do as good a job as some of the other guys, you know, and so forth.
Well, any auctioneer, be one that's selling tobacco or real estate or used cars or livestock, they're a diplomat, they're a negotiator, because you've got the person selling the product and the person buying the product, and the auctioneer has to get both of them to agree on the sale price. So when the tobacco auctioneer goes into the warehouse to sell, he's got to make sure that the farmers have confidence in him, and he's got to make sure that the tobacco buyers have confidence in him. So when he's got a strong melodic chant that really takes charge of the situation, the farmers are comfortable with him because the farmers aren't as experienced and they don't spend as much time in the warehouse as the buyers do. And so if he's got the strong melodic chant, the farmers are going to trust him. And if he knows tobacco, then the tobacco buyers and the warehouse operators are going to trust him. And Mr. Whitaker, he's the total package. He's got the good chant and the knowledge of tobacco, so the buyers and the sellers are going to have faith in his negotiation. Now, we've got just a few minutes here left, Mr. Whitaker. Why don't you sell us some more tobacco? Do you want the microphone or you want to sell it like you used to?
Make any difference. I want to answer this.
Oh, we've got a question here.
Didn't the warehouse
Yes. Let me. Yeah. The question was, who starts the bidding? The man that owns the warehouse knows the pile of tobacco, and he calls out a bid. I, as an auctioneer, take over that what he called out, and I either go up or I go down. Now, the truth of the matter is, and that's a very good question, the truth of the matter is most tobacco in the days when we were selling tobacco at auction, most of it is sold going down because a warehouseman is trying to satisfy his farmer. And he says, the farmer, you know how farmers are. I'm a farmer. I know the same way. He thinks his tobacco is worth more than what it's worth, generally speaking. So if the warehouseman is starting that pile of tobacco, he's going to, let's say that the average is $1.65 a pound, and he's got some tobacco there, he's going to probably start that tobacco at 70 or maybe 72 or 3 or somewhere in that neighborhood, and then I took it and would go down. Of course, for several years, I actually hired an auctioneer, and I did the starting of the sales. I hired the world's champion. Wasn't me now, the world's champion. Walter Wilkerson, who was a world champion auctioneer, and I hired him to come down, and I started the sales, and he did the job because I could do a better job. I tried it for a while, starting it myself and selling it myself. That's hard. No. No, ma'am. That probably in art it may be true. As the tobacco,
and they're trying to get the price jacked up and to get the excitement and craziness going so that people go nuts and buy something.
One of the things that
But you do a whole different thing.
And of course the thing about it is, in most cases, in the later years of doing this, there was a government support price on this tobacco. And when you got to that government support price, and I'm not going to get into that because that gets into politics, so I definitely won't get into that. But when you got to that support price, if a company hadn't bid at least a dollar above what that support price was, it went into what they call the co-op or the pool, which was a support, and then it was put into processed and then later was sold to the tobacco companies later. We're out of time, and I think I'll just do this without the microphone.